Ladies and gentlemen, the Theosophical Society has much pleasure in presenting Mr. Geoffrey Hodson, international lecturer and author, in a talk entitled The Science of Meditation.
Friends, at this present time in world history, all thoughtful people find themselves faced with the problem of the attainment of mental serenity, enduring happiness, and peace of mind and heart. People feel the need for discovering their true selves, for self-realization, as it is called. In this address, I am going to offer some guidance in that quest, that search for the self, the true spiritual God self, which we really are. Of course, such a quest is not new and especially associated with today. Men have always sought to know themselves. One finds, for example, that Thales, the ancient Greek philosopher, sometimes called the Sage of Miletus, dealt with the subject. He was once asked, very interestingly, by the follower of a sect of the time, a sophist. Thales was asked these 9 questions, which he answered straight away. I'll give you the questions and the answer which came from Thales. What is the oldest of all things? God, because he has always existed. What is the most beautiful of all things? The universe, because it is the work of God. What is the greatest of things? Space, because it contains all that has been created. What is the most constant of all things? Hope, because it still remains with man after he has lost everything else. What is the best of all things? Freedom, because without it there is nothing good. What is the quickest of all things? Thought, because in less than a minute it can fly to the end of the universe. What is the strongest of all things? Necessity, which makes man face all the dangers of life. 2 more questions remain. What is the easiest of all things? I wonder what you who are listening to me would say in answer to that. What is the easiest of all things? Thales said, to give advice. Now comes that last question. What is the most difficult of all things? To know thyself. The sage of Miletus was right. The most difficult of all things is indeed to know oneself. The kingdom of heaven, it has been said, is within us. Therefore the power, the happiness and the peace which we are all now seeking must also be within us. How are we to find this power, happiness and peace which we are so urgently needing? How can we become aware of our own divine nature, the God presence within us? How to find our spiritual selves and live consciously in the presence of God, in his service, and in the service of the human race? These are indeed pressing human problems, particularly for those people who are taking life seriously at all and are thoughtful people. Well, what has theosophy, which is that the ageless wisdom, all knowledge, all truth, what has the ageless wisdom to contribute to the solution of these pressing problems? Theosophy recognizes the value of at least three approaches to the source and the center of the divine power within each one of us. The first of these approaches is the personal approach to God through prayer, particularly in times of need. Love for a parent is instinctual in man. It is natural, therefore, as also very wise, frequently turn to the spiritual parent of all men. For whilst human parents die and pass beyond our reach, the spiritual parent can never disappear, can never be lost. Such sincere and earnest prayers are always answered, though not necessarily in the way which we might expect or have hoped. It has been truly said that more things are wrought by prayer than this world dreams of. And if to potential words we add potent acts and make the atmosphere within and without us pure and divine, then the God within us can act outwardly. Then we can help ourselves and others. We can even perform seeming miracles by the power of the discovered God within us. It has been said that ardent prayer opens heaven. Rather a beautiful phrase, isn't it? It's out of a poem called Night by the poet Young. Ardent prayer opens heaven. Prayer turns and attunes the mind and the heart to the all-present divine life, love, light, and power. The Lord's Prayer is a splendid example of such effective means of supplication, as are many other prayers in the scriptures and prayer books of the Christian faith and the scriptures and practices of other religions as well. Prayer does not always mean supplication and petition, however, but it also means adoration and a reaching upwards or inwards towards the supreme source of life. For it is possible to rise on the wings of prayer, on the wings of devotion and adoration to the very heart of divine love. And it is also possible, thereafter, on occasion to feel and to know the unfailing presence of God. By means of regular prayer, heart and mind become sensitized to this unfailing presence of God. It can be felt as a consoling and an inspiring power and as a kind of supporting force within and all around us. One can come to know that in very truth the everlasting arms are always underneath. And that in part is the way of prayer. To come to know that the everlasting arms are always underneath. Then there is the other approach to God. It is through congregational worship, as in temple, cathedral, church and chapel, and also as in family prayers, rather out of fashion nowadays. These prayers can prove most effective for certain temperaments, for it is often easier to be uplifted when aspiring with a group of like-minded people than when one is alone. We lift each other up, as it were. And if one of us doesn't feel particularly inspired or is tired, perhaps, at the time of corporate prayer, but the prayer force of all the rest can lift us out of that fatigue and enable us to ascend much higher than we normally would have been able to reach. And so congregational worship is, for some temperaments, a very helpful method of finding the God self within and without. Then, as my title suggests, meditation, a means of becoming aware of the still, small voice of the God within, and ultimately of becoming one with that divine interior presence, the living God. Meditation, then, constitutes a third way to realization of the divine and to the attainment of true spiritual power. Meditation is perhaps the individual approach to God in love and aspiration, asking naught from Him, but only seeking to realize oneness with Him. We can do this, you know. We can become consciously one with the very highest deity, for the causeless cause has its shrine and altar in the holy and untrodden ground of the human heart. Although God is normally and naturally invisible, He may be known and heard as the still, small voice of our own spiritual consciousness. Those who worship the deity thus do so in the sanctified solitude of their own souls. They seek to make their spirit, the God spirit within them, the only mediator between themselves and the universal spirit, their good actions, the only priests. Now, this way is open to those who are spiritually awakened and who experience what Ruysbroek, the great Flemish mystic, called the hunger for God. These most surely find, for truly the divine life and the divine intelligence are within each one of us. They are, in fact, the reality of our existence, our very selves, the spiritual soul of man. Now, what are the laws governing self-illumination? How may this divine presence and power, which is the true self, become personal experience to you and to me down here in our workaday lives? Theosophy answers very clearly and precisely. It says, in the main, by three means. What are they? Well, changing when necessary the motive of life from selfishness to selflessness, changing the mode of life from self-indulgence to self-restraint, third, by regular meditation. Should I repeat those three? The means of self-realization. Change when necessary the motive of life from selfishness to selflessness. Change, when necessary, the mode of life from self-indulgence to a measure of self-restraint, a reasonable measure. And thirdly, by the practice of regular meditation. This is rather strange to us, this idea of meditation, isn't it, in Christian lands? How does one meditate? Let me describe an effective method of attaining, of self-illumination, of gaining self-realization by means of regular daily contemplation of God. To achieve this, then, a certain time must be set aside each day, A period of quietude must be arranged for, preferably in the morning, it is taught, for then the brain is rested, the mind reasonably quiet, and the occult forces which make for enlightenment are on the increase. It has been said that God knocks at the door of the heart of man once in every 24 hours. Often we fail to hear this knocking of one who continually seeks entrance into our lives, don't we? And this isn't because we're not seeking. It's rather because, quite necessarily often, we're so busy with the duties of the day. If, however, we can set aside some 10 minutes or a quarter of an hour every day, when we can silence heart and mind for a time and turn our thoughts towards the source of our existence, then the divine presence can make itself known to us. Daily, alone and in quietude, we can open the door of our hearts that God may enter in. What else is necessary? Well, privacy is essential for full success, for to be suddenly intruded upon when one is abstracted in thought is to run the risk of nervous shock and strain. One does become very abstracted when thinking of these great themes, and nervous shock and strain resulting from intrusion can be avoided by ensuring complete seclusion during meditation. Much has also been said about correct posture in meditation. In the East, where the science of yoga, or union with God, is taught and practiced, numerous postures are advised. But for ordinary purposes, and for us in the West, it is only necessary that the body should be completely relaxed. No strain or tension, remember. The body should be completely relaxed and the spine straight, preferably erect. Physical relaxation, in its effect on meditation, might be compared to the careful engagement of the first unit of the zipper, which makes the rest of the series of hooks engage smoothly. So, physical relaxation is essential to the flight of the soul. Then the breathing should ideally be slowed down to about half the normal speed. But breathing exercises with the thought concentrated upon some center in the body are not really necessary, and they can be dangerous if improperly carried out. I would warn, for example, against breathing under certain methods with the mind centered upon the solar plexus. That is very dangerous indeed. Never below the heart is the great rule in Aryan occultism. Then again, with privacy and the correct posture, the effort to meditate should be regular, whether results are noticed or not. For as Nietzsche said, in the mountains of truth you never climb in vain. Either you reach a higher point today, or you exercise your strength in order to be able to climb higher tomorrow. Therefore, once having begun, we should try to keep on, for it is regularity and constant repetition which contributes so largely to success in the search for the spiritual self. These rather external matters attended to, the actual process of meditation begins. For that, the thought should be fixed upon some great truth. For example, the all-present divine life within us and without us, or the oneness of all life, binding all in oneness, the burning oneness binding everything, as a poet has written. The unity of the spirit of man with the spirit of the universe, which is God. These and other truths should be collected and then dwelt upon, contemplated, until personal realization of them begins to be attained. Beautiful scriptural texts expressing them may well be sought and collected, chosen as aids to concentration, particularly at first. For those Christians, for example, who find concentration difficult, the more joyous and beautiful scenes in the life of our Lord may be mentally pictured, and one can live in them. The details may be filled in, and the divine figure itself clearly visualized. Love and adoration may then, with all reverence, be offered to him, the Lord Christ, as the aspirant seeks to touch the hem of his garment, and later to become one with him, and thereafter to live in his very presence. Then, as has been beautifully said by Ruysbroeck, I think, there will descend into the still heart the sweet rain of new inward consolation and the heavenly dew of the sweetness of God. Members of other faiths than the Christian may similarly contemplate the lives of those who founded them and others who have been sources of spiritual inspiration. An effective method of meditation is consciously to dissociate oneself, one's center of awareness and observation, to dissociate oneself first from the physical body, next from the emotions, and then from the mind, finally affirming one's own divinity and unity with the divine self, which is the same in all. In this method also, concentration may be aided by means of such mental affirmations as these. One can mentally and strongly begin the meditative process by affirming, I am the divine self, immortal, indestructible, eternal, radiant with spiritual light. I am that self of light. That self am I. After a time of silent contemplation, one might go further and affirm, the self in me is one with the self in all. I am that self am I. Before passing from one affirmation to its successor, a pause should be observed to permit contemplation and realization of the truth which has been affirmed. By this third means, private meditation and contemplation, the soul may be lifted up into the realization of its own inner splendor and of its unity with the one supreme splendor of all. As this experience is approached, the mind naturally becomes still, a kind of divine silence pervades the thought world and the mind, and it's then, in that beautiful but dynamic stillness, that the higher consciousness still enters into its experience of oneness with God. As great mental and spiritual heights can be reached by contemplating one's unity with the divine source of all, then the return to physical awareness should not be sudden. The center of consciousness should be deliberately brought down, of course I'm speaking diagrammatically only there, first into the mind, Then, after a brief pause into the emotions, and finally into the brain and body. And this should be followed by a few moments of physical rest and self-adjustment before taking up the duties of physical life. As a further help to those who seek to acquire the technique of meditation, which, by the by, has been described almost as a neck, here is a brief description of what may be expected when the center of consciousness is elevated into union with the immortal soul, the ego, the spiritual and eternal self of man. Mystics and seers unite in describing this experience. They unite in testifying to an entry into a brilliant and supernal light, the light which never was on land or sea. The center of self-awareness and of observation is as a more brilliant focus of light within a vast and shoreless sea, in which other such centers, representing the egoic selves of other beings, are to be seen. Then there is a great intensity of existence and activity, combined with perfect equipoise and peace. There is no sense of either effort or resistance, duality having been reduced to a minimum. Such experiences as those of treasured friendship returned, love fully reciprocated, and complete comprehension of a truth, a work of art, or another ego, also characterize egoic consciousness, but in greatly heightened degree. Uttermost certainty concerning the immortality and indestructibility of the true self, and of the purpose of human existence, which is evolution to the stature of the perfect man. Uttermost certainty concerning these truths is attained. The fact of the unity of all life and of the family relationship with all living beings, these are known by every reasonably evolved spiritual self. They are known as fundamental laws and true. Bereavement also, separation, the pain which comes from the loss of loved ones, these are impossible at this level of consciousness to which one can arise in successful meditation, for there neither time nor space can limit the free play of the human intellect. Mutual egoic or spiritual attunement with certain other members of the human family, and especially with those who've become particularly beloved, that mutual inner attunement provides complete assurance of unbroken unity in the spiritual worlds throughout all time. If you love a person and they love you, you can never really lose them. The body may die, but the soul lives on and still loves. Now, meditation, when it's successful, enables one to know this truth. As I said, bereavement, separation, the loss of loved ones is transcended there. Now, the ego of man knows itself to be an eternal, immortal and indestructible center of divine power, life and light, and these well up within it as from an inexhaustible source, and shine all about it as a glowing radiance, bright with many hues. Such then, my friends, in small part, is the condition of consciousness of the spiritual self of each one of us, and such can be the exaltation which we may gain if we engage successfully in prayer and meditation.